Coasting in Neutral recounts a game that my pal Mike Miller and I came up with during the spring of my senior year in high school in 1972. Northlake Road rises rather sharply up into the Coast Range out of the little town of Lakeside, Oregon, on the southern Oregon coast where we grew up. I don't remember whose idea the game was originally. I do remember that we initially played it in Mike's new 71 Toyota Carina, a model they no longer make, but I think was pretty well named given the way Mike drove that car. But at some point we realized that we needed a heavier vehicle in order to get the kind of momentum that would carry us as far as we wanted to go in our little game. It was only many years later that its metaphoric possibilities began to suggest themselves. Coasting in Neutral for Mike. 1. There were simple rules. No seat belts, begin from a dead stop, idling in neutral, then lift my foot from the brake and let gravity's Catholic marriage to friction take us down Northlake Road at its own pace. Me behind the wheel of my parents' 69 Electra, Mike beside me, Newton riding shotgun in absentia. Leisurely is one word for the way these midnight trips began. Their precise starting points, negotiated empiricism, varied for mass and wheelbase, the necessary darkness slipping past the windows as we picked up speed. Mike passing the joint to me, hissing, "Hit this sultry bitch before it's too late." And yet it never was entirely too late. The pinch burn in fingers and lungs, me steering left-handed, sputtering, "Take it, we're about to go genuine." Mike's Alfred E. Newman grin opening on his face like a weirdly happy flower. We exhaled as one against the windshield, the smoke curling back into our faces like all the unasked questions. Sultry was a word Mike had learned at some indeterminate time after Mrs. LeClaire kicked him out of English class sophomore year for wearing a wire coat hanger around his neck. An odd last straw that sent him away from the world of road desks into one of front and back seats where sultry could be used and used again like a pretty local girl who might somehow take you over the rumpled rise of train tracks at the edge of town, around the corner past the grassy airport landing strip, and right off into the purported world. But it never quite came round that way. So there we were, coasting into whatever waited underneath, hurtling through the soundless dark, laughing because that was a viable option, like the jack stowed in the enormous emptiness of the trunk beside a bald spare tire. 2. Headlights and a bit of luck are all we need to make the first corner. Speedometer tipping 60 now. We hurtle past the old growth fir at the pullout above Northlake Bridge. Mike shrieks, "Hug the ditch, bitch!" My foot poised in the dark above the brake, an apostate's admission that never quite touches down. Radial smoke the double yellow and lateral drift takes us in too deep. No oncoming lights make of luck a virtue worth the bet in retrospect. Now the hill has emptied us out the bottom of the easy bit at 65, but the yellow diamond ahead points its black right-angled arrow left. The square beneath reads 25. Make that, and it's a long straight roll towards the stop sign at Northlake and Main, 900 yards ahead. Mike's pounding the dash, leaping on the seat, howling like some hybrid creature at large in a feckless world. The corner, unbanked and closing fast, well understood but unfriendly, ditched at the edge, and everything depends on getting out the other side at speed. I cheat the center line, Mike's face pressed into that narrow angle where glass meets vinyl, straining for the sheen of oncoming lights. Tires smoke left to right, burning the fog line to the gravel shoulder, the ditch, a wet and toothless gash grinning up at the smear of the Milky Way. And then we're through. Speedometer at 53, a number that could mean seconds or years. The only question now, how far we would roll. Mike giggles, sits up, torches another number, passes it my way. Well steered while ungeared, he grins, cracks a window, and sends a stream of smoke into pre-dawn dark. 3. Now we roll the floodplain into town. Mike up in the seat, affecting the prom queen wave, conducting the cosmos to order by the rhythm of his embered wand as we tick off the gridded streets. 14th, Jerry Smith's house, a wild man, dead now, decades. 13th, Gary Stevens, killed a month later, drunk, head on at the crest of Eel Lake Hill. 10th, Gene Turner, 3 years later, tackles my brother Brad in a no-pads pickup game behind Lakeside Elementary, bruises his brain, seeds the Parkinson's, still taking its time with him. None of this known yet, but coming, surely closing as we rolled on, aiming to violate the stop sign at North Lake and Main, own the record unaware of its consequent cost until the limit we were coasting toward led us by to the other side, the paved road giving way there to gravel, its quiet, diminishing applause beneath the tires as we roll slowly to a stop. Mike is subdued now, looking out the window at Raylene's house, the vague swath of moonlight slanting over it. A record, he says, looking at me with what might be sadness. Where were we then? How had we gotten there? How much further might we still need to go?